Prison Colony Resistance is brought to you by Sam and the Maxman Productions. Prison Colony Resistance. Today we have another special treat for all of you. Today we have another resistance leader here based in South Australia with us, Sam and the Vax Man. And we're going to be chatting to her for as long as we can. We're trying to get as much information as we can. And with me today to chat with our guest, who will keep it secret for now, keep you on your edge of your seat. Sam, how are you today? Are you excited for our guest today?
I'm doing well, Vax Man. You look a bit tired. Was it a late night last night?
Oh, man, we've been doing so much here at the Prison Colony Resistance podcast to bring information to everyone. So, yeah, I haven't slept. How about you, Sam? Have you slept?
Not a wink. No, there's too much information to absorb, and I can't say no. I can't seem to stop.
And one reason I didn't sleep was I spent all of last night, and I couldn't stop. I was watching videos by our guests. And our guest today, without further ado, is the wonderful, awesome resistance leader who has such in-depth knowledge about this whole vaccine psyop that we've been living under, Elizabeth Hart. How are you, Elizabeth?
I'm great, Vaxman. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for chatting with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on. You're someone that I've had on my radar for quite a while. And before we start, I'm just going to tell you a quick story. We have actually met before.
Right, Sam?
Yes. So I think it was at the August Freedom Rally here in Adelaide where you spoke.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so you were saying, you know, the COVID numbers are completely false. And, you know, you get hit by a meteorite and it's classed as a COVID death. And that stuck with me. I thought that was bloody funny. But as you finished, I thought, you know what? I'm going to go and introduce myself because a couple of weeks prior, I'd seen a video of you and I thought, oh my God, here is a extremely well-educated woman putting into words so beautifully exactly what I'm feeling, but all I can muster up is basically F the government. So you kind of resonated with me. Anyway, I came up to you and I said, Elizabeth, how are you? My name's Sam. I'm a big fan, blah, blah, blah. And you said, and there was another speaker about to start and you said, shh, I'm trying to watch the next speaker.
Oh, did I? There you go. Well, you have to be polite and listen to other people, you see.
That is fine. But I'm glad you did because it was Emma MacArthur and she was brilliant. So
oh, Emma's fantastic.
She is. Yeah, and she's, you know what? Great. She's been dodging my emails. I've been trying to get her on the show and so far, nothing. Radio silence.
She's a little bit shy, but have you read her emails?
I have read her emails.
She's done a fantastic email to Scott Morrison about the pandemic plans that were ditched. None of this, what's going on at the moment, supposed to be happening. There were pandemic plans. And she's done a fantastic email about the modelling that put us into lockdown. Mm-hmm. These are very important documents and they're going to be coming in useful in the future.
Yeah, but at the moment they are going largely unnoticed. And I could imagine, you know, people like yourself and Emma are kind of fighting an uphill battle as we all are.
Well, it's very, very interesting times at the moment because I'm really looking at the UK. From my aspect, the belly of the beast is the UK. This is where a lot of this starts. I mean, we know this has been in the pipeline for years, but as far as this actual coronavirus response is concerned, the UK is the belly of the beast. And that's what we've got to go back to now. We've got to do retrospective critical analysis to see how this happened. It was the AstraZeneca vaccine, see how that got in place. They started running with that in January 2020. And they were sort of using a recipe they had prepared earlier. You know, they were ready to roll with this. How did this happen? And at the beginning, they knew that this virus or, you know, whatever it is, they knew it wasn't affecting most people. How on earth did we end up with a response to inject the entire global population? This is absolutely amazing. And we have to look back on and see how this happened. See what processes did this go through to be approved? And I'm thinking that there weren't any.
It could even be argued like, hey, listen, it's a vaccine. It's going to prevent illness. We've had it for decades. We've had vaccination regimens for children for decades. And look, we're all living healthy lives. But this is an experimental vaccine. It's an mRNA gene therapy that was, you know, invented, concocted by DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, a research branch of the military. So this is a militarized invention that was originally used for cancer to have T cells find cancer cells. But now we're putting it into human bodies as an experimental, provisionally approved experimental license for a technology that we've never used before. And we're injecting it en masse.
It's absolutely, absolutely remarkable what's going on. And but as I said, I was looking at the particularly the UK vaccine, the RNA vaccine. What we have to look at in the UK is on the 12th of March in the UK, 2020, they announced they were planning to go with a natural immunity response. They were planning to let the virus go and create immunity in the community, as it rhymes. And that would take care of things. That was the 12th of March.
I remember that press conference, yeah. And everyone said, oh my God, millions are going to die. What are you thinking? Yeah. And what are you doing?
That's right. Patrick Vallance, as you know, I think he's the chief scientific advisor over there. He'd announced this. And then a few days later, the 16th of March, the report comes out from Imperial College London, Neil Ferguson's report, report 9. And this report gave the impression that this virus was going to be similar to the 1918 influenza pandemic. And if that was to be the case, that would mean, if we look at the numbers, being that there are all sorts of numbers put around for that 1918 influenza pandemic, and I think that needs to be looked back as well. There's a lot to be looked back on. But let's just take it as is at the moment, and we'll say there were 50 million deaths. You know, they say 20 million, 50 million, give or take 30 million. But let's say there were 50 million deaths. To equate that to today's population, that would be about 216 million deaths with this coronavirus. Now, we know up to now, I'd say, I haven't checked just recently, but it's about 5.5 million deaths in the last 2 years. So if you look at that in context of a global population of about 7.9 billion now, where about 60 million people die every year anyway, and that's 5.5 million over 2 years, and that's mostly elderly people with comorbidities, that starts putting things in context. But who wants to put things in context? You know, we want to beat this up because we've got vaccines to sell and social credit systems to put in place. So, of course, it's been all built up, you know, to scare everybody. And this is what we have to go back and look at now. So there we have it. Within a few days in England, they now go with Ferguson's report. Now, Ferguson's report was recommending suppression of the virus, which has become known now as lockdown. And this was to occur until a vaccine becomes available. And they were at that time, this is March 2020, they were saying it could take up to 18 months. Now, as we know, the vaccines were rushed out and they were being stuck in arms in the UK by December that year. Wow. I mean, unbelievably quickly that these things were put out. And it's worth remembering, because I've sent an email to Anders Tegnell challenging him about things. He's the epidemiologist in Sweden. I sent him an email in December 2020 where I was referring to, and I include a reference to the deaths up to that time. 1.6 million deaths have been recorded up to that time. That is incredible. 1.6 million deaths is nothing. And to put in place a vaccine response across the globe, this is what we have to go back to now and say, how did this happen? It's incredible that this happened. They just went over the top with this. They used this virus to put in place what they wanted was for people to just be told to have injections on demand and to also put in surveillance, QR codes, and that people will be obedient and wear rags across their face when told to. You know, this whole thing has to be blown open because the people in the... all around the world, people have been completely exploited and humiliated over this terrible event. And it's got to all be blown up now.
It's been quite a journey. Sam and I, we've discussed on the podcast how we became alerted to this. And to We just kind of naturally gravitated towards each other. Somehow we found each other and we started this podcast. And we got on this ship. We got on this turbulent sea of mainstream media pandemic doom. And our little ship has been chugging along and we've been resisting. Sam is the captain. He's the skipper. I'm Gilligan. We talked to a professor just recently. We talked to Tim Dwyer and his wife, Corrine. They're fantastic. So we'll call them the millionaire and their wife. So we have a professor, a millionaire and his wife. We have a skipper. I'm Gilligan. Which would you prefer to be, Elizabeth? Would you prefer Marianne or the Fair Maiden? Or would you prefer the movie star Ginger on our
Oh my
little ship
goodness.
chugging along?
Gosh, you're really pushing me there to remember that lot, Gilligan. I'll let you
So
decide.
we discovered, we started chugging along. I started looking at this in early 2020, January, when I started seeing those videos of Chinese people plopping over and the security guards with the machine guns and the psyop suits. Sam has been looking at this for a while. How about you, Elizabeth? When did you get clued into this whole vaccine dystopia?
Well, I've been actually looking at it for years now, and it might seem rather bizarre, but I got involved in 2008, and it was with my dog. Dogs, as you know, are vaccinated every year with parvovirus and what have you. And that's how I got into this. I would get my dogs vaccinated every year because we get a letter from the vet, reminding us to get these injections. And one year, my dog became very ill. And subsequently, they put her down, and I was absolutely shocked by this, and I'm horrified. And it wasn't until my sister actually mentioned, what happened before this happened, because there was no explanation as to why this occurred. And I said she had a vaccination about a week beforehand. Bang! Once I started looking at this, it was huge. Over vaccination of pets was a recognized thing, particularly coming out of the US, that these were live vaccines that they were giving to the dogs, the parvo distemper adenovirus, and parvovirus is the big ticket item. And they were giving these live vaccines to the dogs every year. I found out they shouldn't be doing this. There were actual guidelines that were recommending it against this. And so that set me off on this path. I was absolutely livid about it. I've got a vet that I'm trusting for medical advice. Not only is the medical, I'm going there to get advice to keep my dog well, he's actually killed the dog. This is a really bad outcome. So I prepared a report for the regulator, the Australian Pesticides and Veterinary Medicines Authority. I had long email discussions with the Australian Veterinary Association, and we actually won on this. Choice magazine took it up. It was in all the newspapers. This was in a time before what's happened now. This was really the way things should happen. You've pointed out a problem, in your liberal democracy, you can discuss it, you can raise it with people, it gets addressed. And that's what happened. I mean, it's all been trashed now because of this whole vaccine thing. I think that the vets are still, over vaccinating the animals. But that's how I started. But I got into it that way. But I started getting interested in human vaccination because it's very interesting to compare these things. In these guidelines for the dog and cat vaccines, they were saying that we need to reduce vaccination of dogs and cats to minimize the risk of adverse reactions. Now, you think about that, and you think about how many vaccines people are getting now. A huge amount of vaccines. Children are getting more than 50 doses of vaccines over childhood, from birth to teenagers. 50 doses. That's in multi-component shots and revaccinations. Another thing that these dog and cat vaccination guidelines pointed out was that adverse events are grossly underreported. And this is the same for human vaccination. So there are really important parallels to look at across veterinary medicine and human medicine. That's what we've got to look at now. So I'm looking at the whole picture here. It's not just COVID for me. I'm looking, my ultimate goal, I want the vaccination schedule examined because it is awash with conflicts of interest. People have no idea that the people who are recommending these injections to be put on the taxpayer-funded schedule. A lot of these people are conflicted. They've got associations with pharmaceutical industry. They're on vaccine clinical trials, and they're also making the decisions about what goes on the schedule, So this is something that's got to be exposed. But we have been so hindered. The massive thing that has been a disaster for us that has really come to the fore during COVID is we have no media. We have no independent fourth estate keeping an eye on government, shining the spotlight in dark corners. It's not happening. We're relying on guys like you and me, the people. We have to do this work ourselves because the mainstream media is a conflicted mess. And part of that conflicted mess is the rotten, wretched ABC and SBS. The Morrison government holds the purse strings for these organisations. So we've had no critical analysis from these organisations. They've just been propaganda machines. I don't know if you've noticed over the past few years the tone of the ABC and SBS, how patronising it is. They're just promotional machines for the vaccines now. They're just pushing these things out, telling us what to do. You know, no critical analysis. And that's why we've got this dumbed down public who are not equipped to question what's going on, because we've just got no media. And the worst of them all is the Murdoch media, News Corp Australia. They're tabloids, the Telegraph, Herald Sun, what have you, and the Australian. These have become propaganda machines pushing the vaccines. And a crucial fact that people will not be aware of is that News Corp Australia is a corporate partner with the Murdoch Children's Research Institute. This was sort of co-founded by Rupert Murdoch's mother, Elizabeth Murdoch. And this organization, you know, oh, it's there for the children. It is involved in vaccine research, and it's involved in COVID-19 vaccine research with the Doherty Institute. This is a massive conflict of interest that should be disclosed on any article that the Murdoch media publishes in regards to vaccines. But it isn't, you know, it just isn't disclosed. And this is what's got to be exposed. When you said they're tied up with the Doherty Institute, it was the Doherty Institute that put us into lockdown in March 2020. And the Doherty Institute used, or it was influenced by, the Ferguson modelling out of Imperial College London, which recommended suppression. So this is the stuff that has to be exposed that the general public has really got not much clue about. Another very important thing to realise with the Murdoch media is they are responsible for the no jab, no play concept. The Murdoch media in 2013 to 2015 ran this aggressive, nasty, vindictive, vicious campaigning for coercive vaccination of children. Now, a lot of people will say, yes, children have to be vaccinated, but children are getting a lot of vaccines now, and we have to look into what's happening. But they ran this campaign, and they ended up getting the no jab, no pay law out of it, because the politicians all went on board with the Murdoch media's agenda. And Scott Morrison, he was the social services minister at the time, and he raised the no jab, no pay bill. Now, we have to look back at this, because it looks like the Murdoch media has a lot of influence on our politicians. And now Morrison is the prime minister. And lo and behold, we have the no jab, no job concept that this a lot of people finding out about.
This was almost,
you take it there, Sam. Yeah.
This was almost a soft launch, essentially. You know, they tried it out on the kids. They scared parents into, if we don't jab our kids up, we get no benefits. They don't go to school. We can't get them into daycare. So they did. They tried it out on the parents and the kids. It was bloody successful. And, you know, a few years later, guess what? It's rampant around Australia.
Yeah, that's right. Because it was pushing for the children. There's also, what was also been going on is this anti-vaxxer labelling. Anybody who questions vaccines, they are tagged as anti-vaxxers. We're talking about a major medical intervention here, and they have just belittled this by calling. Now, this has been set up. This has been going on for years. They've created this thing, and it really a lot of it came from. I mean, it's been going on, you know, for the past century. But if we look at Andrew Wakefield. Andrew Wakefield is the pin-up boy as to what happens to people in the medical and science establishment if they do anything wrong, question vaccines, you know. And from when Andrew Wakefield made that possible association with the MMR and autism, he was hammered, and the anti-vaxxer thing just blew up. But that's an important thing to look back on now, because that really sprung from, it was just an early report that was published in The Lancet. It was just a suggestion there might be some problem with the MMR that needs to be looked into further. That's what really sprang from that. But because he was threatening the MMR, he got blasted. And my theory with that it's not so much just that the measles vaccine, but it was the fact that it was a multi-component shot. It was a three-dose shot, measles, mumps, rubella. And it was the precursor for what's happening now with our schedule. There's a shot on the schedule that's a 6-in-1 shot, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, there's so many in it, hep B, polio, and Hib in the one shot with an aluminium adjuvant given at 2 months and 4 months and 6 months. Children are getting so many injections. They put them all in that one vial because that's the way they could, you know, people wouldn't come and get them individually. They'd be asking questions. So this is the thing we have to sort of ask questions about this now. So I find this COVID thing is going to give the possibility for that happening, and we have to get it happening. But the COVID thing for children now, this is absolutely diabolical, that children are being given COVID injections. It has been well known that children are not at risk with COVID. They know that there are problems now with the COVID injections. They're not preventing infection and transmission, nor transmission. Yeah, you know, how on earth can they be giving them to children? It is just beyond belief what's going on.
I think the ratio for myocarditis, pericarditis, it was advertised at 1 in 15,000 by the CDC. Rare. Quote, it's a rare thing. So don't worry about it. Long COVID is so much worse. And that was the propaganda. And long COVID, you don't want your kids to have long COVID. 1 in 15,000, forget about it. That's nothing. It's not going to happen. You have better chances of winning the lotto. Then the Israeli data started to come out. And now there was a recent study looking at a hospital in the States, looking at the codes that they use and how some of these adverse events in children are hidden with other different codes in the hospital. So now the official rate through research, through peer-reviewed studies, through scientific analysis of what's happening has gone down to, I think it's 1 in 3,000 or 1 in 2,000 kids have a risk of having a swollen heart that's going to scar over. And
no, actually, I mentioned there's an article that I've read recently, which is giving people a lot of, you know, to give you courage to speak out. And it mentions, I can't remember the exact, I think it's the ASH experiment, where they tested people like this, like you're saying. They gave these questions with really quite obvious answers. And they were testing people out. They would have a group of people. And then say there was a group of six people, five of them would give the wrong answer. And eventually the other person would start giving the wrong answer as well, because they even then they could see this isn't right.
Yep.
It was a setup, but they didn't want to go against the herd. Yep. You know, and this is what's happening now. You know, so many people in Australia, but we can't really blame people because they've just been so misled by the media. The media here is really quite astonishing. Mm. We have got such a biased media here. You know, in the US or the UK, there are alternatives out there in the mainstream. But in Australia, almost the entire mainstream media is of one mind. It is not giving alternative opinions. And the biggest letdown is the ABC and the SBS, because they are taxpayer funded. I don't know if you've noticed, years ago, the ABC used to have forums on its articles, that you comments on its articles. We have not got a public forum where we can discuss major issues. I try and leave comments on The Australian. I subscribe to The Australian, not because I rely on it as an independent news source, but because I have to watch the propaganda. You know, and it really irks me that my family has to pay $480 a year for this rubbish, you know, media outfit that's really looking after its own corporate interests. I leave comments on so many articles, and so many of my comments are censored. So I'm subscribing to, so they are controlling the narrative. They are putting out articles that fits their narrative, which is the pro-COVID vaccine narrative. And they are shutting out people who try to give a dissenting view. They're just censored. So they're just shaping the narrative. They're not letting people see other points of view. This morning, for example, they are now attacking George Christensen, you know, the MP, national MP. He's been fantastic and so brave and sticking to his guns. Mm-hmm. And he has been challenging the vaccination of children with these COVID injections. And of course, the Murdoch media is ganging up on him. They've got the useless Labour opposition in scare quotes, who are just terrible, because of course we've got all these Labour premiers around the place who are acting as dictators, having everybody have these injections. So they are ganging up on George Christensen. So this morning I went in and left a comment on this article. And I cited a published journal article saying how children weren't at risk. Guess what? Not published. This is happening all the time. How many people have been shut out of the conversation? They have ruined our liberal democracy. In the future, this is what's got to be exposed. What has happened with the media in that they have let this problem go? You know, when this, you probably the same boat, in March 2020, when this happened, I was just agog the whole time. I thought, I cannot understand what is going on. These emergency laws were brought in. We had state emergency laws and the Federal Biosecurity Act. And then all of a sudden, we had no more rights. We had no rights where our elected representatives have just dumped us. You know, I was writing letters, you just get rubbish form letters back. It was a massive coup. We were just taken over and our rights were taken away. It is unbelievable. And the Biosecurity Act, that was put in place in 2015. And that's when the no jab, no pay law was put in. That was put in early 2016. The lobbying went on in that 2015. This has all been put in place. And the Australian Biosecurity Act, it has a facility to put people in prison for 5 years and or a $66,600 fine for people who refuse vaccination. Now, they didn't have coronavirus, but, you know, it wasn't in the picture then, but they were planning for this. They had this set up. Who was doing this? Who's behind it? There's so much to go back and look at now.
As you said, Elizabeth, like the mass media, the mainstream media, the legacy media, however you want to call those fools, they don't talk about this and they're suppressed. And here at the Prison Colony Resistance Podcast, we've been trying to bring this to light. Sam found a really interesting conflict of interest connection with our former treasurer, Peter Costello, with the vaccines and the media and investment funds. That was quite shocking. And that was, we discussed that in episode 2. And in episode 2, we also talked about the tax incentives that are given to ABC, SBS, as long as they give a positive spin to the vaccine agenda. So you have the media given tax incentives to not talk about the adverse events and what's really happening. You have Peter Costello pitching his investments and they're this $2 billion government fund or even more, I think, to focus on this and pitch the vaccine agenda. And then we talked about, on our latest podcast, we talked about Nicholas Wood, an associate professor for the University of Sydney, who just wrote a piece in The Conversation saying, look, if parents are disagreeing about getting their kids jabbed, here's the case law. And he has some intern do the case law for him and completely misinterpreted as a person with legal experience. But he also talked about just do it because the science is there. So you do a bit of digging into Nicholas Wood and you realize he wants to jab neonatal, like he wants to jab babies before they're born. And then he's funded in 2019, he was funded by the government to put in the Pfizer rollout for these genetic mRNA gene therapies. And before that, from 2008 to 2018, he was funded by the NHMRC. And they are a government institution who has funded people like Nicholas Wood to ensure that they keep their IP. So they discover some sort of vaccine, they're allowed to keep that IP, make millions off it, and still claim that they're a neutral person, advertise or like informing the general public about the truth. And as a professor, you listen to them, but there's all these conflicts of interest that arise and you really start to see, as if you said in several interviews, if you know where the person stands, you know what they're selling you. So this is just amazing. And you have such knowledge about that, like that depth of corruption that's happening now. Would you talk a little bit about how all that happens? Like you've kind of mentioned it through this no jab, no play and no jab, no pay. Is there anything else that you see that is egregious that you want to share?
Oh, there's loads. There's loads of stuff. It's massive. I mean, you're talking about Peter Costello. So he's a former federal coalition treasurer and he is chair of Nine Entertainment, which Sydney Morning Herald and The Age are in that stable. So they've been pro the whole COVID thing, you know, nonstop. And he's
Our non-Australian listeners, we should say Sydney Morning Herald is obviously Sydney and The Age is the newspaper for Melbourne.
Yes, Victoria. Yes, and they're the major newspapers there. And he's also chair of the Future Fund, which is heavily invested in pharmaceutical companies, such as CSL, for example, which is involved with the COVID vaccines. And I think Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer and what have you. So you see the conflict there. He's chair of a media outfit He's also chair of a fund that's invested in this pharmaceutical. That can affect the narrative that's coming out of those of that media. Absolutely. You know, so this is the trouble in Australia. Channel 7. They, you know, we've got to look at these different television stations. How much money have they gotten out of the Morrison government, taxpayers' money, to promote the COVID vaccines? Look how many advertisements were on the telly promoting these things, you know? How much money are they making out of that? And so they become conflicted, because then you find their news services, they're just actual promoting the vaccines as well, or the injections. They're not vaccines, but you know what I mean. These are just injections, they're jabs. But they are getting free advertising on news services. And this is impacting on people. They are really believing that this is a serious matter, that they need to get these injections. It's relentless that people are pushed and pushed and pushed to get this. But the public has no idea of how rotten the whole system is. The TGA, you know, the TGA approves these products. Who knows out in the community that the TGA is funded by industry?
I do.
They actually their funding. Yeah, you do.
I know. They get their funding from Pfizer. They get their funding from Merck, from CSL, from J&J. But I've found that if I have these conversations, and I was having these conversations before I was sacked, people would look at you and their eyes would just glass over. They did not want to know about it. And something that, you know, sits in my belly that just fires me up, because anyone can see that this is, at worst, corrupt, at best, a conflict of interest.
Yeah, it's just huge conflicts of interest. But I find, I don't know whether it's cognitive dissonance, that people don't want to find out that the structures that they think are in place to look after us are actually corrupt, is that they just can't face that.
Their minds would literally implode if they found out that their thoughts and their what they think the government is and what they should be doing to us, but what they're actually doing to us is slowly destroying our communities, our economy, our freedoms, our way of life, that that would blow their mind. I think for a lot of people, especially of a certain age group who, say, you know, read a paper in the morning, go to work, talk about what they read in the paper that morning, come home, watch the news, they couldn't handle it. I think that their worlds would be absolutely shattered.
I think there's something, this has fascinated me. Like, we haven't, apart from our brief meeting before, we haven't met each other before. You know, I haven't met the Vax Man before. And yet here we are, bang, straight into it. No mucking about. We're on the same, plane with this sort of stuff.
Yep.
It fascinates me that this is happening all around the world. You talk to these individuals all around the world, and yet there's this other mass of people. The lights are on, nobody's home. You cannot get across to them. They will not believe this until it comes through the telly. You know, until it comes through a recognised mainstream thing. So for my own peace of mind and sanity, I no longer talk to people in the mainstream about this sort of thing. It is not worth my time. I know who to target. I'm going for the perpetrators. That's what it, and you've seen my letters and emails.
Yep.
I'm writing to the people who are accountable. And people say to me, oh, do you get any responses to your letters and emails? And often I don't. But that isn't the plan. The plan is I'm putting things on the record. It's on the record that I've written to Grant Stevens, the police commissioner. He's the person who's signing off on these mandates that you've suffered with.
Yeah.
You know, it's on the record I've written to Stephen Marshall and Nicholas Spurrier and Scott Morrison. It's on the record. And the major thing that has got to blow up is informed consent.
Yeah.
This is the most frightening thing ever. In my opinion, not one person in Australia has given informed consent to these jabs because they haven't been properly informed. You know, Greg Hunt admitted that this is all part of a global experiment. When you are a part of an experiment, you have to consent to that. You know, when you're actually in part of a clinical trial, there's a ream of papers that you usually have to sign off on. People aren't doing that here. They're just getting shoved through. Any sort of person is sticking the needle into them. They are not giving informed consent. How many people knew at the beginning that they were being lined up for multiple shots throughout life? Not many people knew. How many people know that the Morrison government has signed up for 280 million doses.
I knew.
Yeah, well, you're aware, Sam.
Oh, Sam, you're such doses. A kiss ass, Sam. Oh, look, I'm here in the back of the class smoking a cigarette. You're putting your hand up. Me, teacher. Oh, my goodness.
Well, unfortunately, you're very rare. You know, people are not informed.
No, they're not. And you know, you mentioned you are quite a good letter writer. There have been a hell of a lot of letters which I have read, and the responses, sometimes you don't get a response. But there was one response. I think it came from the TGA when it was an email titled "Could COVID-19 vaccines facilitate virulent variants?" And I think their response was, and I quote, "All viruses are expected to naturally mutate over time, and there is no credible scientific evidence to suggest that vaccination drives the evolution of variants. Indeed, widespread uptake of vaccination is critical to control the circulating virus in the community and therefore minimize the opportunity for the virus to mutate." Now, that was written, I think, last year. That response was sent to you last year. And it's funny, looking back on that response now, and we can see we've had a few strains since then.
Yeah.
And this is what happens when we try to vaccinate our way out of a pandemic.
Yes.
Especially a coronavirus pandemic, because you could argue like these attenuated viruses, what we used to put into kids before we started putting in mRNA gene therapies, these attenuated viruses were live viruses or that would actually compel your body to make you immune. It would compel your own natural system to develop antibodies. Now, how much stress you want to put on your system to develop those antibodies, you know, and like you said, Elizabeth, like these, I had my first kid, my daughter, around the time of the no jab, no play. And we were trying to put her into kindy, but she had to be vaccinated. And we said, look, we don't really want to vaccinate this much so soon. So can we just get this shot individually, wait 2 weeks? No, you have to take these 6 shots in one. If not, so we were forced to adopt the schedule of vaccination, and luckily no adverse events for either of our children, but we saw this pressure coming in. However, this coronavirus vaccine that they claim is a vaccine does not sterilize. It doesn't kill the virus. It doesn't prevent transmission, and it doesn't necessarily make your body create antibodies. Rather, it puts an mRNA, a little signal, into your cells, and that little mRNA protein has to be wrapped in 4 lipid nanoparticles that are quite toxic, that contain polyethyl glycol, I believe, which is like antifreeze. So yeah. This is building up in the ovaries of young women or any women who are being injected with this. This is building up in your bone marrow. We have no idea what these lipid nanoparticles are going to do in the future and what health consequences they'll have. And on top of that, we have virologists and immunologists like Geert Vandenbosch, who used to work for the WHO making vaccines for the Ebola virus. He came out and said early in 2020, I think mid-2020, he said, you cannot vaccinate yourself out of a pandemic, especially a coronavirus pandemic, especially with non-sterilizing, non-immunizing vaccines, quote unquote. And what you're going to do is create variants. And everyone laughed at him. And everyone said, you're a freaking conspiracy theorist. And he also said, if you do that, you might develop what's called antibody-dependent enhancement, where a escape variant, who has already defeated the vaccine because it's escaped, that wasn't killed by it, is now in the community. And if it enters into a person who has been vaccinated with the same concoction, these mRNA gene therapies, it's going to get past their defenses quite easily, get into their body and start replicating and causing a mess. What should be a mild infection, as the Omicron is for unvaccinated folks who have 100% natural immunity, is almost deadly for the double vaccinated and the boosted. Yet, we hear the narrative is fracturing. This is such a mild strain. Don't worry about it. But for the double jab, it's become horrible. I mean, and even though we think the narrative is fracturing, it's actually helping to cement what they're selling, which is doom, pandemic, death, chaos, dogs and cats living together.
Well, I mean, I'm not claiming to have any expertise in immunology, my having, because I'm into the politics side of this. But what I'm finding is that I don't think there are any experts out there. You know, they are really playing this along. Nobody who really knows, you know, what's going on. When you're talking about Geert Vandenbosch, I think what you're getting there is the leaky vaccines. I came across this back in 2015. There was a paper published in 2015. It was about Marek's disease in chickens.
And would you care to explain what that is for our listeners who aren't familiar?
I'm not expert, but the gist of it is, I think, is that there was this disease in chicken, Marek's disease. And they started vaccinating the chickens for this disease. And they were finding that the virus was getting more virulent because of the vaccination. And that who would be at risk is the unvaccinated chickens, you know. Now, I wrote to the author, the lead author of that study, early last year, Andrew Reed. And I was along the lines of like, hang on a minute. Is anybody thinking about this? You know, these are leaky vaccines. We know that these COVID vaccines are leaky vaccines. Is anybody looking into this? And he came back to me eventually and he sort of said, oh, you know, this carnage, the carnage that's been happening with COVID. And we just have to go ahead with this and all this sort of thing. I thought, utter rubbish. It is unbelievable that they have gone ahead with these injections. I cannot believe it. And we have to sheet this home. Who was really at the forefront of this in 2020? It was Bill Gates. Bill Gates led the race for the coronavirus vaccines. That he was the guy who was the mainstay of this. And the public has to find out about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You know, they think he's this philanthropist, you know. They've been running international vaccination policy for the last 20 years. And they've been pulling, you know, it looks like they're philanthropic and putting money in, but they've also been pulling money out of governments. They're getting billions of dollars invested into vaccines. You know, this is what has to be examined. In 2020, he had Boris Johnson on a string, you know, about getting these vaccines out there. And it was Bill Gates. There's a thing, if you just Google Bill Gates, Gates notes and COVID, you'll probably be able to pick it up. And this is in 30th of April. It was Bill Gates. Dr. Gates is out there saying what's going to happen, planning to inject the whole world, that it should be on the children's schedule. The whole shebang. This guy's running the show. Yeah. It is incredible. Yeah. And now we have a situation that where injections that were rushed out against a virus they knew was not a problem for most people are now being now stuck into everybody. I am horrified that reportedly over 90% of people in Australia aged over 16 years have had these jabs. Yeah. It's horrible to think about what's going to happen in the future. We don't know what this is going to do to their natural immune response in future. They could be responsible for autoimmune diseases or whatever. I highly suspect that a lot of adverse events that have happened after these injections are not being reported. You know, the doctors, the public might be very shocked to find out that the doctors have been gagged, that they can't speak out about these injections. Their regulator, which is ARPRA, they have threatened doctors so that they speak out that they can get struck off. How bad is that? That is really bad. How many people know that the vaccine manufacturers are protected from liability? The doctors are protected from liability, I understand. These poor people are going in there with getting these needles stuck into them and they haven't got a clue what they're being set up for. They haven't got a clue that they could be set up for these injections for life. I mean, now it's emerging in Europe. You know, they're talking about the fourth jab and they're saying, oh, hang on, you know, we don't, not sure we can go this far. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This thing is going to blow sky high. And when it happens here, I don't know what people are going to do. Because when you think of, you know, like Sam was saying, people in the healthcare areas, people have been coerced into getting these injections to keep their jobs. This is diabolical. The immunization handbook has it laid out about what is valid consent. It's a voluntary decision. You're based on the information that's given to you to consider and without coercion and manipulation. What's been happening for the last 2 years? People have been coerced and manipulated to have these injections. And I've written, as you probably read the emails, I've written so many emails challenging this, including to Grant Stevens and people within SA Health and Spurrier, you know, and they've just completely ignored it. I cannot believe what they have done, that they have facilitated these people getting these injections, many people against their will, and they're only doing it because they have to keep their jobs. Organisations like BHP are coercing their employees to get these injections. You know, we have to start looking into them. There's lots of conflicts of interest there. BHP is a founder of the Grattan Institute, and the Grattan Institute, it was the institute that was pushing this over 90% vaccination rate. These are things that have to be examined and explored. What's going on here? The Grattan Institute was also co-founded by, I think, the Victorian government. We've got to look into these things and see what's going on with these conflicts of interest. And, you know, just going back on that, you know, I was talking about the TGA. The TGA has got a committee to do with vaccines. We've got the ATAGI, Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation. We've got the PBAC, which approves the vaccines for the schedule. We've got to look at these people who are on these committees and see what their connections are. Because there are so many conflicts of interest that are hidden and the public doesn't realise this. It has to be exposed. And it also goes back to our useless system of government, where we've basically got this two-party system. And as far as COVID is concerned, they have been in lockstep together.
Yep.
The Labour opposition has been completely useless, has not kept the government to account. And because we know there are Labour premiers who are dictators now, enforcing people to have these injections. Look at what's going to be happening in Western Australia from the 31st of January. People who've refused the injections, who've refused to submit to these defective jabs, they're going to be discriminated against, prevented from going to restaurants and living life.
If I could dig down into that. So basically, right now, if you've had two jabs or you've been boosted, you now have had your cells create T cells to defend you against the spike protein from the Wuhan strain, the original alpha strain. We're several generations past that. So these proteins change quite dramatically. And the vaccines now, these mRNA gene therapies, can't really handle the Omicron. So they get into ADE, the antibody-dependent enhancement, where they're let through the gate unopposed, and they can just wreak havoc in your body. And you see Dr. Carrie Chan stuttering through the fact that 33 out of 36 deaths were double vaccinated in the New South Wales latest health report. So this is happening. However, our premiers keep insisting that no. What we have to do is these two shots that didn't work to prevent you getting infected with Omicron, well, you need to inject one more of those. So you need to boost yourself with an extra ineffective shot that does nothing to prevent the infection, yet opens you up for a whole other can of worms and lowers your immunity, your immune response, dramatically. And if I may, Elizabeth, I know that you probably don't want to see this, but I have to share this with you, because just for our listeners, just to get it on the record, as you say, this is our dictator Dan, as we call him here on the Prison Colony Resistance podcast. And this is what he was saying about the boosters, a nice little short clip just to kind of show or explain to our listeners what is happening here and how the oppression works.
Absolutely crystal clear. This is not an option. It's not an add-on. It's not a good thing to have. I think we're very close to a change in policy that will simply reflect the fact that in order to be fully protected, you need to have three doses, not two plus an optional extra, but in fact, to be fully protected, to be fully vaccinated, to have fully played your part, you need not two plus an optional third, but three doses.
Yeah. And they
fully played your part.
They called us crazy at the start when we said, guess what? It's not going to stop at two. You're going to be lined up for the third.
Notice how you say fully protected and fully vaccinated. So fully vaccinated means you can now enter the arena and the stadiums and all that. So that's now on your green tick. Fully vaccinated now means three in Victoria.
Surely people are going to start fighting back now. I mean, I know there are people who got the jabs who didn't want to have them, but they thought that I've got to do it because I've got to, you know, there weren't even people who were working, they were retired people, but just be able to go to the restaurant or play golf or whatever, they felt they had to do it, you know. But surely they're going to be saying, hang on a minute, I didn't buy in for this. I wasn't explained, you know, that this was going to happen, you know. So you've got to hope that there's a spark in some people that they will start fighting back, because it's going to start happening. I mean, it's blowing up in England now. In England, it's starting to happen. They're cutting back on the restrictions and the masks and what have you. Boris Johnson is under immense pressure. As I've said to you, I'm really looking at the UK, and I'm writing to people in the UK about this. I'm writing to politicians in the UK about this, because I think this is what we do now. We go back and this can all blow up. Now, one of the things that I've just brought up recently is the monkey study. The monkey study that was used for the AstraZeneca vaccine. And in this monkey study, it was reported that this monkey study had worked, that the monkeys were healthy. But then it's come out that actually the monkeys were infected. Now, this is very, very significant. They were saying that the monkeys were infected in the upper respiratory tract, I think. But this means that they knew these vaccines were leaky from the very beginning. This is huge. If it comes out that they have deliberately spread leaky vaccines around the whole world, and I'm looking at AstraZeneca, but it looks like the other vaccines are leaky as well. This is what we have to go back to now, that they knew these things weren't preventing infection or transmission. How on earth could they put these injections out there? This is a massive crime, and I think it's got the capacity to blow up the pharmaceutical industry altogether. They might be protected, but I don't think that protection is going to work if it comes out that they have deliberately put faulty injections out there. How could they do that against a virus they knew was not a problem for most people? How could they put injections out there that weren't going to prevent infection or transmission? What on earth was the point? I'm hearing about people now that I know, Nick Kyrgios, for example. There's a prime example. He was jabbed. He was proudly jabbed. Guess what? He's had COVID, you know? So much for that. And we've got Novak Djokovic, he's sort of castigated for not having the injections, has been thrown out of Australia. The reason why he was thrown out of Australia is because he is unvaccinated. And apparently that is a threat that he could be, a rallying call for other people. That's why that man's been thrown out of Australia.
But he submitted.
What sort of dictatorship are we in here?
In his visa application, he submitted his visa application to Tennis Australia and said, look, I had COVID. Here are the tests to prove that I've had COVID. I'm naturally immune. And Tennis Australia said, all right, you're good to go. Come on down. And the Morrison government didn't like that at all. Natural immunity? Uh-oh, that's a bad idea. Don't sell that.
We can't make money off of natural.
Sorry?
We can't make money off of natural.
No. See, well, this is what's going to come out. We've got a natural immune system that works very well if it's allowed to, you know. And they are now messing around with people's immune systems and doing goodness knows what damage, and particularly 5-year-old children. How can this be happening? They know these injections aren't working. They know it. How on earth can they interfere with a 5-year-old child's immune system?
I think, you bring up people that are double jabbed that get COVID, and the way they see it, the way they explain it, well, I'm so glad I got double jabbed because I got COVID, but it could have been much worse, right? I could have ended up in ICU. I could have been on a ventilator, but because I've had 2 shots, I've only just got a little sniffle. Now, I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's not how a vaccine's supposed to work.
Yeah, I had dinner recently with a friends of mine from Sydney. I used to live in Sydney. And they stayed and went through this oppressive Berejiklian reign of terror, the 90% rate that you had to reach to be able to leave your house. So they got vaccinated. They didn't want to get vaccinated. They got double jabbed with the Pfizer. So they came down, and the whole time they had their mask on, those teal greenish masks. I couldn't even see their face. We would go to a restaurant and they would look around at all these people who were unmasked, walking in unmasked here in South Australia in Adelaide. And we started talking about the fear that they had of how it could have been worse. And they were telling me, you're gonna die, Ricardo. You're not vaccinated. If you get infected, you're gonna die. Later on, we're having dinner at a nice steakhouse. And we start talking about, our comment, sharing stories. And my friend tells me that she's suffering migraines. And then she asked me, don't you suffer migraines? And I just had to say, no, I'm unvaccinated. And she just looked at me like a moment of, I thought I had reached a moment of waking up, but she said, no, it's not about the vaccines. But that's when they started, right? Why aren't they about the vaccines? What is it about these shots that then makes people deny that the medical intervention they put into their blood, who has changed their health outcomes, their mental outcomes, how come they don't associate it? What is happening that they can't link the two?
It's the cognitive dissonance. I think it's a well-known thing. I mean, I remember seeing cases, particularly that were reported from America, where somebody had a family member who died and it was after the injection. And they would still say, but still, people should still get the vaccine. You know, it's a cognitive, they've just been so, they're so wedded to this idea. It would just ruin the whole world to find. Well, I'm sorry, you're going to have to find out the hard way. It's got to blow up because it's happening. I think there are just millions of adverse events not getting reported. You know, hearing about people I know having various things, and I'm thinking, oh, I wonder if that's connected with the injection, you know? Because what should happen, this is what I picked up from when I was doing the PEPVAX thing, it's not an adverse reaction that we should talk about. It's an adverse event. And all these adverse events, and it's not just a day after, it should be like weeks, months, even years after these injections, they should get reported. And that's how we would see a pattern. Big problem that we have is A, the doctors are under pressure not to do anything that can threaten the injections at all. The other problem is that to report adverse events takes time. You know, there should be a number, there should be a Medicare number to report adverse events, because doctors, their businesses, they're not, what are they going to spend their time on a thankless task that they're going to get a lot of grief for doing because that people want to cover up about the vaccines anyway, you know? So there should be a number on Medicare so that they can book time against preparing a report. That's the only way we're going to really find out about these things, you know, because this is really going under the radar, that people, that things aren't getting reported. You know, you can imagine somebody having some event, a heart attack or an aneurysm or something like that a few weeks or a month afterwards, and people aren't going to make that connection. We've got to highlight this, that anything that's happening after these jabs. Another thing that's really sort of getting on my nerves a bit is that people are making the comparison with the other vaccines on the schedule, and they're saying, oh, look, with COVID, we can see, you know, the people who are trying to highlight their adverse events, we can see there are so many adverse events. With COVID, we've got a situation where mass populations of people are being injected. But you should not be insinuating that there are not adverse events with the other injections. I think there are many that have been hidden and that haven't been reported for years. It's been kept under wraps. And that's now we have to get this whole idea. We've got to look at these medical interventions and the problems that could be happening with them. You know, I've been looking at other, you know, the injections on the schedule. A big thing for me is the aluminium that's in a lot of the injections, that this causes an inflammatory response. And there's been a real growth in aluminium adjuvant vaccines for children. And this could be having, you know, problems down the line in life with autoimmune diseases. This is an area that really has to be looked into. So from my perspective with COVID, this really gives the opportunity to say, we've got to look at the whole schedule. You know, it's awash with conflicts of interest. We've got this whole corrupted system in Australia with the two-party government, not, you know, just helping the pharmaceutical industry, really, you know, and then the media, of course, is conflicted. We've got corporate media, you know, there's just, the whole thing is ready to explode. You know, it's like been bubbling away there underneath, and now it's ready to just go bang.
Yeah, you're right. It's funny because we were talking about this while we were waiting for you this morning, Elizabeth. We also read this morning that the UK will be easing their Group B restrictions, so no masks, and that is on January 26. And then towards the end of March, no more isolation periods. They are scrapping the lot. So what brought this up was... you know, is the narrative actually starting to crumble? Well, I thought, oh yeah, maybe it is. But then I thought, well, maybe it isn't. Maybe this is part of the plan to, you know, for such a long time, you know, the last 2 years, the government has had so much influence and effect on our day-to-day life. And all of a sudden they're pulling back. They go, no, you know what? You're on your own. We're gonna live with it like, you know, we were supposed to at the start. So you're done. No more lockdowns, no more masks, nothing. Will this then, you know, will the general public go, you know what? Will they start crying out for governments to actually lock them down? Is this a Stockholm syndrome, essentially, you know? Try to push them in the right direction, but they keep grabbing onto government and say, you know what? We're scared, we don't want to go out. Apparently, Australia is in a shadow lockdown at the moment. There's no one going out. People are too scared. So, well, I'd like to think the narrative is crumbling. I just think this is just the next step in the plan.
No, I think it's crumbling. I definitely think it's crumbling. As I said, I'm watching the UK. We've got to remember, from my perspective anyway, I'm really looking I mean, there's lots of, we know there's lots of background on this, but the Ferguson report, as far as COVID was concerned, I think is key, absolutely key, because that influenced lockdowns around the world. This is what's got to be sheeted back to now, that Ferguson report. The handling of COVID in the UK is crucial. There was a group called, you guys would know about SAGE, was supposedly guiding the Johnson government, or whether the Johnson government picked the experts that it wanted to, you know, to tell it what to do, because that's what they wanted. They wanted this lockdown and this opportunity to bring in these controls over people. So this is what we've got to go back to now. Like, for example, when that report came out, Ferguson's report, it wasn't disclosed in that report that he was funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, we know that's a very important thing to know, you know, that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been running this agenda for years. Now is the time to start putting that spotlight on the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We've got to realise that that foundation has been funding media across the board. For example, I put comments on the UK Telegraph. Now, that's a very useful paper in that it's the Tory paper, it's the Conservative paper, and I was really following the articles in that paper. But it gets funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's had $3.4 million worth of funding. This shapes the narrative again. Mm. Now, with that paper, I was able to leave comments because they were going up unmoderated, but they would sometimes get censored. Now, recently, I've been banned by the Telegraph. This is the problem that we're finding with censorship. I've been banned by the Telegraph because on an article on the Telegraph, I brought to the fore the conflicts of interest of Andrew Pollard. He is the chief investigator on the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. He is also the chair of the UK Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation. Massive conflict of interest. And they were covering that up. I brought that out there, and then I found out that I was banned by the Telegraph. So I'm going to challenge the Telegraph in the UK about this, but they're covering this up, because this has to come out. Because that guy, he initiated that Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine in early 2020. And this is what has to be examined now, how this could happen, that this whole area is full of conflicts, you know, that this is what we've got to expose. I've also challenged Andrew Pollard. This is something you've got to think about as well, as to how this happened. So the virus wasn't a threat to most people. So then they have vaccine trials. The vaccine trials are with people who are aged 18 to 55 years old, healthy people. Why are they having vaccine trials in healthy people, 18 to 50, people who were not at risk of the virus? This is what we've got to track back to now. You know, how did that happen? I've written to the Ethics Committee in the UK about this. How did they approve those trials? And I've had a response. And this is one of the things that I'm going to be pursuing. How did this happen? Because by that happening, this has facilitated everything that's happened since. You know what I mean? They also had trials in children. How could you have vaccine trials in children when children are not at risk of the virus? This is the sort of thing now we have to go back and unpick. They've been getting away with this sort of stuff for years with vaccines because this has been a no-go area. You're not able to question it. It's the church of vaccination. It's pure dogma. The journals like The Lancet and British Medical Journal, what have you, they are just sort of like, these are the places where they pump out these papers, which get used then for policy, vaccination policy. But a lot of these trials are funded by industry. The whole thing has got to be exposed, you know, the peer-reviewed literature. You know, you cannot speak unless you've had a peer-reviewed paper. You know, this is what we're going to expose, the peer-reviewed literature. There's masses of things ready to be just exploded for what's been facilitating this whole thing that's been going on for years. And that's what we're trying to do now to help expose this.
I think you're right. Like this sort of vaccine autism conversation has been simmering. Yeah, it's just been simmering there on the stove, and nobody's kind of looked at the pot recently. Nobody's stirred it because it's just simmering there. No worries. But there's a lot of connections. And Robert Kennedy wrote a book, The Real Anthony Fauci, where he really examines the connection between autism and the increasing rate of vaccination in our children, where it used to be 1 in 400 kids would have autism. Now it's 1 in 10, up to 1 in 10, 10% of the population suffering the inability to socialize and connect with others simply because they were put these vaccines put into them with these adjuvants and these what are they called, excipients, which cause who knows, like, you know. So This now, the mRNA gene therapy experiment in children, we know is going to lead to their immune system being hijacked by the technology, the mRNA technology. So their natural immunity for coronaviruses, at least, will now be severely compromised. Coronaviruses have run rampant. We've evolved with them. We've made a deal with coronaviruses.
But this
You.
is, if I could just butt in here, because
Yeah,
I
go
think this
ahead,
is
Elizabeth.
really important if you've got the time for this. This is really important. With the MMR, for example, it's got fetal bovine serum in it, which I think believe is a protein. Now, from my research with the pet vaccines, when I was in contact with the people who were involved with those guidelines, I was hearing from one guy in particular, Ronald Schultz, you do not want to be getting injections with that in regularly because it can cause autoimmune problems. These are the thoughts sort of things that we've got to be looking into in these ingredients, in these injections. And with you're talking about the MMR and the neurological and what have you. The thing that is going under the radar because the MMR was getting, all that attention is the aluminium adjuvanted vaccines. That they're the vaccines I really want to get a spotlight, put onto those. That 6-in-1 shot I was telling you about, that has got an aluminium adjuvant. And this is really important. I started looking into this in 2013. There was a paper published in the Lancet Infectious Diseases, a systematic review, and it was indicating that the aluminium adjuvanted vaccines were safe. And so I read this paper, and this is the thing you see, a lot of this was behind the paywall. A lot of people don't read beyond the abstract. So the abstract of this review was saying that, we can't see any problem with these, with the aluminium adjuvant. Then I looked at the paper and it was like, are you kidding me? When I read the paper, it came out that they admitted that the data they were looking at was of low methodological quality, otherwise known in layman's terms as rubbish. So if you're looking at rubbish, you cannot make any conclusions. What they should have concluded was that this data isn't much use. We need more data, and then we can make a decision. But that's not what they did. Now, this gets more interesting for people who are interested in this sort of thing, in that this systematic review was authored by people who were connected with the Cochrane collaboration. Are you familiar with Cochrane?
Oh, the name rings a bell, but I need to
Yeah, well,
contextualize it a bit.
this is important. This is this Cochrane collaboration. There was a realization in the scientific community that there were all these papers being published, all justifying whatever they wanted to justify. And what was needed was this sort of independent body to evaluate these papers and see if they really stood up to scrutiny. And this is where you get this idea of systematic reviews from. So Cochrane was this sort of, loose group of all these academics that were going to do this sort of work for the good of mankind or whatever, or humankind, So this sounds very, very good. So these people were associated with Cochrane and they put out this review. Now, when I came across the main author on this review was Tom Jefferson. And I'd come across him because he'd done a Cochrane review on the flu vaccines. And in layman terms, basically saying the flu vaccines were rubbish. Okay. So I thought, oh, Tom Jefferson, he's a good guy. You know what I mean? Because this was big, because for anybody to say anything against vaccines is massive. So I thought he was a good guy. But in the process of doing other research, I came across this review on the aluminium adjuvant vaccines that was published in 2004. And when I read this review, I went, what the heck? This is terrible. This is rubbish. And so I wrote to him and I said, what's going on with this review? And it's a Cochrane review. It doesn't make any sense. And I gave him a whole lot of, backing of what I was arguing about. And he came back to me, he said, oh, simple, it's not a Cochrane review. So this was interesting. It was published in the Lancet Infectious Diseases, but it had Cochrane on it. So it was giving it the sort of imprimatur of Cochrane, but it hadn't been published in the Cochrane database. Now, this might sound a bit convoluted to you, but honestly, this is really important because this review was published in 2004. What else was happening around that time? The HPV vaccines, they were underway. HPV vaccines, which were known as the cervical cancer vaccine, or were actually human papillomavirus vaccines, they were coming out. And they have got this new aluminium adjuvant. Okay? So this was almost giving the go-ahead for the safety of aluminium adjuvant vaccines. Other things were coming out, like that 6-in-1 shot. Meningococcal B vaccines, aluminium adjuvanted. The Hep B vaccine is aluminium adjuvanted. The pneumococcal vaccine that's given to babies, aluminium adjuvanted. So this review was giving the impression that these vaccines are safe. Mm-hmm. And this review is cited in Australian Department of Health publications, which say that the aluminium adjuvanted vaccines are safe. But when you look at the review, it's rubbish. And I've been trying to get attention for this since 2013. Think about that. That's blowing 9 years ago. I've challenged Cochrane about it. I challenged Jefferson about it. I've challenged the Australian government about it, because the children are getting too many aluminium adjuvanted vaccines, and this could be causing inflammatory responses. This could be having consequences for their health down the track. We need this to be examined. So that's just one example of a problem on the schedule. Well, and we can't get accountability. You know, I'm writing to people about this. They just will not be accountable. They just shut it down. You know, this is Department of Health. This is the NCIRS. This is the sort of thing that has to be exposed. And with the MMR, there's another big problem with the MMR, which I was shocked to find out about. And this is, again, babies, they get maternally derived antibodies from their mother to protect them. And so the reason why babies were vaccinated with the MMR at 12 months is because up to that age, the passive immunity from their mothers, the MDA, was protecting them. But what was coming out was that children of mothers who are vaccinated, because it takes time for us to find these things out. Now they've grown up, they're having children. The children of mothers who were vaccinated, the maternally derived antibodies that they pass on to their children are wearing off earlier. Now, this is really significant, because a 12-month-old baby has got that capacity perhaps to defend itself. But if this MDA starts wearing off at 9 months, that could be major problems. Now, I've had rapid responses published in the British Medical Journal on articles about this, flagging this. They publish it, but they're not following up on it. They put their heads in the sand about the problems that are coming out about vaccines. So there's a couple of things that we need to talk about with vaccines. So, you know, this ties in with the COVID agenda. What it gets down to is that because this whole area has been suppressed in the past with this anti-vaxxer tagging and all of this sort of stuff, that's why we're in this rotten situation now, because they've suppressed discussion on this in the past. And now we're in this mad, completely batshit crazy situation where we have got children being given injections against a virus that wasn't even a threat to them, where we've got these injections that have been pushed out into the community, you know, after about 6 months. It's just completely crazy, and we've got to find a way to get this get people talking about this.
Now, Elizabeth, I do hear our listeners, and our listeners are screaming at their wherever they're hearing this podcast, and they're saying, "You three are just conspiracy theorists. You don't even know what you're talking about. Why would the government lie to us?" If I could share something with you, Elizabeth, that kind of illustrates your point. So, the United Kingdom's Medicinal and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, called the MHRA, they publish documents from Pfizer. So the pharmaceutical companies submit their like technical studies and they tell them this is what's going to happen. These are what's in the vaccines. And so they send that off to the MHRA and they publish it. So this one's called REG174. Information for UK healthcare professionals. So this is a document on their website so that healthcare professionals can download it and know what to tell their patients when they're selling them the mRNA vaccines. And so this is what that actual document says. This vaccine contains polyethylene glycol macrogol PEG as part of ALC0159. That's one of the lipid nanoparticles. Then a study comes out and it's called polyethylene glycol, PEG, is a cause of anaphylaxis to the Pfizer-BioNTech mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. So this is a peer-reviewed study published on the National Institute of Health website. That's, you know, big, that's huge. And the yellow card, the UK summary of yellow card reporting from 9/12, so 9th of December 2020 to 5th of January 2022. So it's a big area of time that they're covering. They say in this summary yellow card reporting by the government, they say themselves, hey, listen, On 9 December 2020, the MHRA issued preliminary guidance on severe allergic reactions after administering the COVID-19 Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine due to early reports of anaphylaxis. So this advice is that people with previous history of severe allergic reactions to any ingredients of the vaccine should not receive. That's coming out from the government, but that's on some website somewhere that no one's going to look at. Yeah. But what does the media tell us? It's safe and effective.
And that's doctors, right. And doctors are still getting...
by having that there.
That what you've just read, anyone, you know, who is susceptible to this shouldn't have it. Yet doctors are saying, you know what, we can't actually give you an exemption for this because this is going to affect our livelihood and our career. So what do we do, man? Our hands are tied.
I think the doctors, though, they literally can't give exemptions.
They can't.
Invented. It's not that, like they're making that decision themselves.
No.
This is what, you know, Spurrier, I think, has to approve all these exemptions. There's a really tricky situation with the doctors. I blame the doctors for this because, they've been going along with this for years. They went along with the no jab, no pay concept. They should have been speaking out then. They've seen this schedule grow. This is where it gets, it's a complicated situation. You know, in the past, you're sick, go to the doctor. Now we've got this whole preventative idea of let's inject the whole population against something that might not have been a problem for most people. And we've got a schedule. We've got these schedules. So with the doctors, it's almost like they're not really putting in any intellectual stuff into this sort of thing. There's the schedule. They're just doing the schedule. They're just like a clinician just giving this injection without, and there's no discussion. It's the informed consent thing has just gone completely out the window. It's there in the immunization handbook, but nobody's taking any notice of that anymore. They're just by rote giving these injections to people as they come into the surgery. So this is what's happened. I've been writing to ARPRA. I've been writing to the professional doctors associations, the Royal Australian College of General Physicians, practitioners, and the AMA. The AMA is just a terrible organisation. That's just, a union of doctors, and I think they're in bed with pharma, you know. But we've got to challenge, we know there are good doctors out there, but the doctors who want to speak out are under threat of being struck off. So we've got to show that this whole system is rotten, that the regulator is inhibiting the doctors from speaking out, the ones that who do want to speak out. That's what's got to come out. Another thing that I hadn't mentioned earlier about the conflicts of interest is another organisation that's very important to look into. The Immunisation Coalition. This organisation is funded by Pfizer, CSL, Glaxo, Merck, Sanofi, okay? And there are people who are associated with this organisation, people like Mary Louise McClaws, Raina McIntyre. These are people who've been very, vocal during this whole situation, using their credentials, professor this, that, and the other thing, you know, using these credentials to push lockdowns, to push anything that facilitates the vaccines, because that, you know, masking, lockdowns, people want to get out of this, so you'll take the vaccine to do it. So they've been pushing these things, but they're not disclosing their conflict of interest, that they're associated with an organisation that's funded by the pharmaceutical industry. This Immunisation Coalition is very influential, and it's also involved in further education of the doctors. So they're, you know, this organisation is educating, in inverted commas, the doctors on various things like vaccines. You know, this whole medical establishment has just been taken over by pharma. You know, these doctors, they're just pumping out these products and vaccines. You know, who leaves a surgery these days without some product, prescription for some product? You know, and you get put on something and you may never get off it, you know? This COVID thing could be leading us to the opportunity to just question the whole pharma agenda. The other thing that's been happening at the same time is that they've been shutting down natural medicine. Mm-hmm. Anybody who wants to do natural medicine, imagine the angst that doctors who are holistic doctors, what they would have been going through, finding out that they have to take the COVID injections, otherwise they're out of a job. They are cancelling out people with alternative views. That's what they're doing. They're shutting us out. Now, somebody like me, okay, I'm retired. I can't play golf at my golf club now. Now, that's minor compared to what you're going through, Sam, with jobs.
Yeah, first world problems.
But it is a first world problem, but it is an important problem, because what they're doing is they're just cancelling people out of society. you will not be allowed to do this. You will not be allowed to go to a cafe. You will not be able to do this. You know, they're saying submit or you're out. So they're getting everybody to be, to think of one mind, to not question things. How evil is this? You know, how much have our liberty has gone in the last 2 years, and where we can have individuals like Mark McGowan in Western Australia, you know, this individual and Andrews in Victoria and what have you, telling us what to do. It's amazing. And how this person can be doing this, can be locking us in our homes and what have you. How is this happening? And why has there not been more pushback? We've talked about this before. You know, Sam was expressing, you know, you can't understand what's going on. Why are people so
afraid? They are afraid to talk out against government. They are afraid to talk out against media because it does. It paints a picture that they're absolutely nuts. But we're not. That's the thing, you know? Like, December 28 here in South Australia, we were supposed to go into full-on segregation, right? Businesses were supposed to go either double vaccinated or, you know, they can have an unvaccinated status. But then, you know, Omicron came in and that was all scrapped. But I think soon enough, and, like, there are businesses already that are taking it upon themselves to only allow double vaccinated people come in. I think soon enough, once the, I guess, you know, inverted comma, peak of this Omicron wave comes in, I think you'll see the reintroduction of this government going, you know what, if businesses want to actually go forth with their status of being vaccinated premises, they're going to let them do that. And I think the fear that has been instilled in the last, you know, 4 weeks since this latest wave, it's massive, it's palpable, and people are going to jump on that, and we're going to be looked upon as lepers, I guess. And
well, let's see what happens. I think with what's happening in the UK now,
you don't think we're going to get there?
As you say, that was interesting because I spoke at one of the rallies just before Christmas, and I mentioned that how we were supposed to be going into that thing on the 20th, and then we didn't.
Yeah,
it was like Omicron came along and it gave them the out not to go ahead with that. Okay. Now we know Omicron is taken over. We know I've got a message this morning that a family member, a fully jabbed family member, has got the old positive PCR. This thing is falling apart. You know, people have got to wake up now. This is ridiculous. You can have three jabs and you're still getting the COVID. It's ludicrous. It's gonna fall apart. And you've got to have that positive attitude. It's going to fall apart because it is complete madness.
Well, yeah,
and now it's time for it to end. You know, this has got to end.
Elizabeth, Sam, I like your positivity. I like how positive you guys are. You're seeing the narrative fracturing, but this is what the Vax Man sees. And they call me the Vax Man for a reason. I am able to channel what new steps are going to be happening in the future. And that Vax information flows through me.
You've got the crystal ball, man.
It's right there, man. It's all in the Vax. Right. It's not even in a ball. It's in my blood. I put so much Vax in my blood that I can see the future for the Vax. And what I see, what I think is happening, is the UK is saying, look, everyone's kind of getting sick of getting boosted, right? And we keep saying you need to get boosted to be safe, but people are starting to see behind the bullshit because they know that the booster is exactly the same as the first two shots. So what they're doing is they're just saying, ease off the gas, let the car float for a bit, just let, you know, just cruise. And when it starts to bite, when the Omicron really starts to bite with the ADE and you know, all of that, then, and if I may, let me just play a little clip by the CEO of Pfizer.
And we know that the two doses of the vaccine offer very limited protection, if any. The three doses with a booster, they offer reasonable protection against hospitalization and deaths. Against deaths, I think very good. And less protection against infection. Now, we are working on a new version of our vaccine, the 1.1, let me put it that way, that will cover Omicron as well. And of course, we are waiting to have the final results. The vaccine will be ready in March.
So there it is. There's Mr. Birla saying that the vaccine is going to come out in March. So I think what they're going to do is they're just going to wait. And then when everyone's screaming, we need the Omicron vaccine, we start back at zero. Double dose, then boosted, and then the new strain comes out. That's what
I'm going to be positive, and I'm going to say it's all falling apart. You know, at the beginning, they said how effective the Pfizer vaccine was. It was going to be two doses, 95%, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's all rubbish, isn't it? Oh, there's a third dose. Oh, there's a fourth. I mean, there's only so much time. You know, these people could only be stupid for so long. And then they've got to wake up and say, come on, you're having me on. The Omicron injection is going to save us. What, the other ones didn't. You know what I mean? Omicron is happening. They can see it's mild for most people. It's ludicrous. This thing has got to fall apart. And we've got to make that happen. We've got to take this and throw this back in these people's faces and make them frightened of what they've done. You know, what's happened in the UK, what's happened here. When you look back on what has been done to people in this country by the likes of Andrews, the mental health problems that are going to be out of this, the amount of people who've lost jobs, who've lost their houses, who've lost their businesses, the damage that has been caused in the response to this virus that should never have happened. This is unbelievable. It's the biggest crime in history. And we've got to make sure that this comes out. And I'm not putting up with any bullshit. It's got to come out. It is huge, you know, that Pfizer guy. We've got to find out what were these contracts that were signed with the government. And you know, it's not we've got the government, we've got the corporations above the government. These corporations, these oligarchs, this technocracy, it's running the world at the moment. How did this happen? How were these monopolies allowed to happen in the world? Were these things supposed to be controlled? You know what I mean? These corporations are running everything. They've ruined so many people's lives. It is now time for payback, and they've got to be brought to account. It is outrageous what has happened, that Morrison has signed up for 280 million doses, and now he's determined that they're going to be stuck in everybody. Mm. This is outrageous. It's got to go. It's got to blow up.
280 million doses for a population of 26.5 million.
Exactly.
I think you might be right. I think the narrative is falling apart, but I think they'll always find a way to pitch it. So this is a little joke meme that's going around. And this is Tedros. He's the head of the WHO. And in May of 2021, he was saying in May, look, mate, you have 95% protection. Take the vaccine. In June, we discovered 70% protection. In July, 50% protection. After that, in August, he started saying, no protection, but it reduces spread. September, doesn't reduce the spread, but it reduces severity. October, doesn't reduce the severity, but does reduce hospitalizations. In November, doesn't reduce hospitalizations, but you aren't going to die. And I'm sure coming soon, you die, but you go to heaven. So get vaccinated.
I like that. See, there you go. You've made
always put a spin on it. Yeah.
There's the argument now that it's falling apart. It's falling
apart.
We'll
see. We love your positivity, Elizabeth. We love the knowledge that you have. We love the analysis that you're conducting on this whole dystopian psyop that we're being put under in the prison colony. We thought we were waking up to our life in Australia, but no, we woke up as an inmate in a prison colony. We can't escape anymore. We have to be double vaxxed if we want to come back into the country. We had to be double vaxxed if we wanted to come back into the state. This is happening. This suppression is happening. And luckily, we have rallies that we can meet and chat and meet like-minded people and get strength and courage among our fellow inmates who are protesting this oppression.
And just remember, it was Morrison who locked us in. He locked us in March 2020. He captured us for the vaccines. And we still, if you're unvaccinated or uninjected, you still can't freely leave this country. To do it, you'd have to get a special exemption, which you probably wouldn't get. Nice. We are prisoners in this country. Mm-hmm. It is unbelievable that these people have controlled us like this. And Morrison is responsible for this. You know, bring on the trials. That's what I say.
Excellent. Well said, Elizabeth. Thank you very much. I agree with you. I think all of these politicians and chief health officers who are pitching, who are trying to inject this with something that is going to reduce our immunity and cause severe detrimental health outcomes in any infection that comes into our system that is allowed past the immune system that we're supposed to have because they were injected with these experimental gene therapies. When that hits, when people realize, oh, shit, I'm fucked. We're going to see something happen. We'll see.
Biggest crime in history.
Do you think the election is going to have any impact? There's an election coming up in the prison colony pretty soon this year.
Well, we have to make sure people are informed. At the moment, we just got a whole lot of misinformed people out there, frightened, deliberately frightened, misinformed people. So that we've got to find some way of changing that. But with this terrible media situation, we are really hamstrung. But somehow we have to get that out there for people to realise that a liberal democracy, a proper liberal democracy, needs a functioning fourth estate. We have been without that for years. And so we have to somehow, we've got to fight for this. If we want our freedom, we've got to fight and take this back. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there who will trade their freedom for supposed safety, you know? Well, you can't live like that. You know, going forward, they'll be very happy with what that might mean for them in the future with what the WEF and co have got, you know, lined up for us. So they say there's like a small proportion in society that will fight for these things. And we just got to keep doing it. We just got to fight for it.
We know what Ben Franklin said. He said, if you want to trade your freedom for security, you deserve neither security nor freedom.
Exactly.
Elizabeth, where can our listeners find more of you, and where can they find all the information that you're sharing with us today?
Well, I have a website. It's called vaccinationispolitical.net. And my original website is over-vaccination.net. So that's got a lot of my letters and emails about other vaccine products and pet vaccs and what have you on there. But vaccinationispolitical.net has obviously got a bit more of a COVID focus, and they can basically, these are my emails that I've been sending out to people, and this is a record that these people have been challenged about things. This is people in the UK particularly, and Australia, about informed consent. Wow, I reckon this is going to be huge when people really realize that they have been tricked and manipulated into these injections by the likes of Spurrier and Morrison and all these people. Wow.
And they'll just use the excuse, I was just following orders. We know how well that works.
But that's happening now. These companies that have enforced the mandates, they are hiding behind the government. Well, the government's told us, so you know, we've got no choice, so that means you've got no choice.
But you know what? Morrison, he is a duplicitous bastard.
He is.
That guy, he is on the record as saying, oh yes, informed consent. People have to give informed consent. He's also the architect of the no jab concept. But what he has facilitated is that the employers and the state governments will do his dirty work.
Yeah.
So he will stand back and say, oh, I said that informed consent, you know what I mean? Yep. But he has facilitated that these employers have taken it upon themselves. You think about what they've done. They've taken it upon themselves to interfere in people's personal health decisions. Now, they might have been thinking, oh, we have to do this because of this killer virus that's going around. They're not understanding that this virus is not as bad as people were portraying, and that people have got to evaluate their own risk. And now that people have had these injections put into them, that we don't know what the long-term consequences are going to be. They've had this stuff, you know, and we know they're not even like the normal vaccines of the past. These are pretty radical, you know, things that they've done. Wow, you know, we've got no idea. And these golf clubs and theatres and zoos and all sorts of organisations have set mandates in place. Who are these people and organisations to be telling other people what to do and to be having injections? This has got really, you know, it's scary to think about what this could mean in the future for what these people have done. It is really scary. Now, we just got to hope that maybe these injections won't have too bad an effect on people in the future, but we really don't know. And we know that people have suffered adverse effects. You know, we don't know whether a lot of these injections were safe because they put so many out there so quickly. You know, we don't know if they're all real or authentic or some are saying or whatever. There's a whole lot of things to be thinking about there. But we do know that people have had adverse events after these injections. And we do know that they weren't properly informed before they had them. And people like Senator Gerard Rennick, he's been really taking that up. Alex Antic in South Australia, he has been, you know, pursuing this matter as well. So we're looking at those senators that, you know, the other politicians have just gone in lockstep with the party. They're not representing the people. So we have to get behind people like Rennick and Alex Antic and say,
what do you
yes,
think of Craig Kelly?
And Craig Kelly, you know, Pauline Hanson, Malcolm Roberts, George Christensen, obviously. There are other politicians in the parliament. I'm trying to, whenever I hear that somebody might be on board, I'd sort of add them to my little list that I'm writing to them. You know, now, but
I don't know. Monica Smith. Yeah, he's great. We've used, what do we use from him? A nice little information that he shared about Gil McAllister over at APRA and how corrupt she is. She's at Monash Uni getting tons of money from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Ooh, I didn't know that. Thanks for that too.
Yeah,
because
sure.
I wrote to them over and over again, and they just ignored me. And I persisted. And finally, I got a letter out of them admitting that, yes, doctors do have an obligation, medical practitioners, to get informed consent. It's there in writing from them. It's in the immunization handbook. It's in a letter from them. And yet they know that's not happening. They know it's not happening. It's just, what the heck? But if you look at Jared Rennick, his Facebook page is very good. He's got quite a lot of information on there. And Alex Antic's Facebook page too. He's putting stuff up there. So there are so few politicians, you know, properly representing the people. We've got to get behind people like them and George Christensen and Roberts and Hansen, because there's so few. I think Bob Catter's another one. We've got to get behind them, and we've got to get them to get other politicians on board, because this two-party system, as we can see, it's just corrupted. You know, lobbyists have taken over and they've just taken over. You know, I found that with the No Jab, No Pay thing when that happened in 2015, 2016. That's when I saw the process. So, the lobbyists do this thing. Morrison then raised the bill, and they raised the bill, and the next thing you know, there's a law. Bingo, bango. So they just get these things through the parliament, and we're all none the wiser. There's so much stuff going through, like the Australian Biosecurity Act. We're out here trusting these people, and they're setting us up for enslavement in the future, you know?
It's true.
It's mind-blowing.
Monica Smith, who we interviewed last week, she was a political prisoner in Melbourne for incitement to go protest, which is a finable offense, and they put her in jail in isolation in for 20 days, I believe she said, right, Sam? 22 days in isolation.
Days.
No sunshine, because she wouldn't take a PCR test. And she said, the way you get past this, the way we find our way out of this, is focus on a political party and do everything you can to get them elected. And that political party should represent no mandates, no vaccines, no more jabs for kids. So find your politician who's speaking truth to power and put them in power so that they can change this whole game. And our other interviewee, Professor Graham Lyons at the University of Adelaide, he gave us some homework. He said, you have to read The Real Anthony Fauci, and you have to read Vaxi Nation. Do you have any homework for us, Elizabeth? Something that could red pill our listeners and wake them up to what's happening?
That's a good question. I'm just trying to think about that now. Well, you can have a look at my websites. there's a lot of information there. I mean, it's detail and it's emails. But for people who really want to get to the nitty-gritty of this, to particularly look at that, my vaccinationispolitical.net, to look at the emails I'm sending to people, the detail that's in there, that's on the record, that these people need to be brought to account. We need people to get across the detail, because in the past with vaccination, it's this vaccination that we need to talk about, these specific vaccine products, to look at these products in particular, to see what they're touted to do and question them individually. That's where things have fallen down in the past, that people are pro-vaccination, anti-vaccination. That's what they wanted. They wanted to create this polarization and then to demonize the people who are questioning vaccination policy. But we have to bring this to the fore and say, this is a medical intervention that's been given to people who may never be at risk of the actual disease, and it may actually impede their response to that disease, to that threat. That is what we have to start bringing out. They've been getting away with controlling the conversation for years. We now have to call them out. And the scientific community and the medical establishment are at risk of really losing their authority because they have let this thing happen. You know, they're going to be exposed as charlatans, snake oil salesmen. You know, they're there with I don't use these terms anymore. I don't call people professor or doctor. I do not use these terms. That has created this sort of false hierarchy that they get, I'm professor so-and-so, and I'm not using those terms. You're equal. You're an equal with me. I'm discussing this subject. You're not getting away with just using your voice from authority. When you dig a bit and scratch the surface, they haven't got a clue what they're talking about. You know, so we've got to call these people out. The general public has to stop being intimidated by the professors and the doctors. Say, you guys, I'm calling you to account because you have brought us into an incredibly dire situation. And it's
payback. Thank you. Great message. Well said. Can I keep my title of Vax Man? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. I think you've put yourself on our ship, and I think you've chosen your character. Obviously, you don't want to be known as the movie star, so you can't be Ginger the movie star. So I think you're Marianne. Just Marianne, our fair maiden, who is wholesome and happy-go-lucky and sharing a very strong message to get informed. Parents, get informed. Don't put this in your kids' blood. It's going to hurt them, and it's going to hurt you. Don't boost anymore. That's a message from the Vax Man. Do not inject yourself with these mRNA gene therapies. They are bad news. Pfizer, questions. Come at me.
Ask questions.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. You're so generous with your time. You're so generous with all the information you've shared with us. Is there any one more message that you want to share with our listeners before we let you go and have your tea?
Well, I think it is ask questions. People should ask questions. Don't be intimidated. Start to ask questions, because I think the time is coming when this is going to blow up. Fingers crossed.
And Sam, any messages for our listeners?
As always, resist, live free, do not comply.
That sounds great.
This has been the Vax Man with Sam and Elizabeth. We'll see you soon. We'll have the t-shirts at the rally, and we'll see you there. Look out for us. We'll be interviewing people on the street, and we'll be putting you in our next podcast, a little clip, a compilation of the resistance boots on the ground. Thank you, everyone, for coming today. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Elizabeth, so much for your time. Thank you, Sam. Everyone, it's been great hanging out. It's just so cool to hang out with people of a like mind who know so much and are able to share their information. Stay tuned to this channel. We shall bring other great resistance leaders, and we shall let them share their knowledge with you so that you can then red pill the rest of the population and wake them up. This has been the Max Man with Prison Colony Resistance. See you next week. This has been Prison Colony Resistance, where you come to get your PCR test for truth.